Hey guys, welcome back to the Beyond Hope Project podcast. I am beyond thrilled to welcome this next guest to the show, Megan McCabe. She's a superstar. I mean, she is at every level of life has been really just kicking butt. And what's interesting about Megan is her transformation, how she learned from her past and brought it to the present, whether it's in parenting, whether it's in her professional life, or just interactions and relations with everybody else. Somebody that I know personally is doing tons of like transformational growth on themselves. And as a friend, it's always amazing to see the changes. I love sharing books with her. We text each other quite a bit, have these different thoughts, and she just takes us on a journey of, you know, what it was like to be different, feel different, and how that translates into not only, you know, adulthood, but work, life, parenting, all that good stuff. So just sit back and take in this, learn from it, see yourself in a story, and realize that we are all very connected, the same as what you'll find in this conversation with Megan. And make sure that you give us a quick ranking, comment, review. Share this with two people that you know. That way we can start spreading this hope and helping people see this. So guys, get ready and enjoy this episode of Beyond Hope Project. Megan, thank you so much for coming in. It is an honor to have you here with me. We have become, like I just was telling you before we started recording, we've become friends through texting.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've known each other for a really long time, but I feel like over the last like, you know, year and a half or so, we've like gotten to know each other through texting because we have a lot in common in terms of, like we said, socially, we're very similar, I think, and yeah. All that stuff like that. But I got to tell you before we start, what I realized about myself on the way here was I might be the world's greatest air drummer. Because like I used to worry about that stuff. Like yeah. People would see me in a car doing it, man. I totally get into it now. And I was like drumming out like to, I think it was like Rob Zombie or something like that kicked on. I was like, oh my God, I love these drums. And I just started. So,
I love that you say that because when I drive around, I think the thing that I notice most is people look really pissed off when they're driving. So when you're driving, you like look up in your rearview mirror and you see somebody behind and they're like rocking out to a song. Yeah. Like that's a feel good moment.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah. I totally went with it today and I just thought I'd share that. Well, you know, because you've listened to the show, so you know, you have a little cheat code of, you know, the first question. So the first question is as we're going into this is how we define hope on the show. Hope is the impact point. It's a point where you start that ignition switch down your path. You're going to start going on it and ultimately something will happen where you'll fail. And in that failure though, a lot of people think that they've become a failure instead of realizing you've learned a lot. And you got to find that way back to the path. So knowing that definition, if there was a point in your time that you can go back and tell Megan at any age, give them some hope, what would it be and when and maybe why?
Well, how long do we have on this podcast? Because I think I can think of probably, I don't know, 200 moments where I could go back and do that. It's a really interesting question because I don't think it's about not wanting to go back and change those moments because I think going through good and bad, those moments, you know, when you go through an obstacle, when you have those challenges, when you have the failures and the mistakes, learning how to get through that is really those moments that build you into who you are today. So I don't know if that's the same for you where it's not really about wanting to go back and change those moments, but there's also pieces or parts of you in that moment that you bring forward with you. And sometimes in those moments, you know, there's a protection or armor that you wear, defense mechanisms that you kind of put on to get through that moment. And when you carry that forward, I think being able to look back to those moments and have those conversations is really helpful for today's version of you because some of that armor might not be necessary for today's version. And it's kind of that piece or part of you that you brought forward is still stuck in that moment. So when you were 10 years old or when you were 15 years old, it still kind of sees you in that moment as needing that protection. So when I think about those moments, it's been really healing. I've actually been doing a lot of work over the last couple of years, thankfully with the help of a really good therapist, of being able to look at what some of those conversations or even like writing a letter, I'm big into writing, is really helpful for understanding, again, understanding what those protections are and being able to let that go. So I don't know, is that the same for you? Like, do you find that there's moments where, and maybe there, it doesn't mean that there's nothing in my past that wouldn't change, especially with, you know, relationships with people. But in terms of those moments, I think there's so much value in going through those hardships and even the painful moments that you learn a lot about yourself, you learn a lot about your relationships, and then you carry those life experiences forward. That's super helpful. Yeah. So,
yeah, no, I agree completely. It's never about going back and changing stuff. Right. It's like realizing, in fact, you know, after we're done here, I'm going to record a solo, and it's about that same sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's about realizing that, you know, if it wasn't for all this stuff, I don't think I would be where I am. And, which is really shitty to reflect on, right? Cause you're like, damn, like that all sucked at that time, but you're like, but that opened up this. And you're almost like, because I think part of us, we want to continue that story.
Yeah.
But you realize that reason why I'm, if I continue that story, I'm just not changing anything about me.
Right.
So therefore I need to change it. But then you have to accept that, no, that bad thing was actually a good thing, which makes you, it kind of flips it on your head when, especially if you're somebody that grew up feeling like different or any of those things where you just kind of felt insecure about stuff or whatever, you end up kind of going like, well, wait a minute, this is what I know. And then you have to unknow what you, I agree with you.
So I think there's themes, right? Like there, you could go back to certain moments, but there's also themes. So one of the themes that I found or a pattern for me is this idea of lack of fulfillment. And kind of having that feeling of having a hole. There's a lot of my life where that made me feel kind of broken, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was never going to be fully happy. And I had some gratitude for that feeling because I think that's part of what drove me as an athlete, right? You learn to set the bar at a certain level and then you meet that level and then you go on to the next one. So there's gratitude for that. But I wanted to feel like I could eventually see the light at the end of the tunnel or, you know, accomplish what I was setting out to accomplish. I just didn't know what that meant. Mm-hmm. So I think my advice today would be that there's actually a lot of value in learning to enjoy the process. So I think you actually talked about this on one of your podcasts of you had this metaphor of climbing mountains.
Yeah.
So, you know, you set out on this journey to get up to the top of this mountain and you work your butt off to get to the top and you get to the summit and you have this like moment of celebration. And then you're like looking out across the mountain range and you're like, man, like that mountain over there, that's a little taller, steeper, more challenging, more pretty, like whatever it is. And you're like, well, I got to go do that mountain next, mm-hmm. right? And you've barely gotten done celebrating the mountain that you're on. And then you realize to go get to the top of that mountain, I've got to go all the way back down this one. Probably rest, recover, save, whatever. And then you're climbing that next mountain, which is going to be more challenging. So at some points in my life, I was like, you know, when is it going to, like, when's the last mountain going to be? Mm. But then when I take back, you know, and look at it from a different perspective of really enjoying that journey, and I think a lot of it is enjoying the people that are with you on that journey, and then also enjoying the process of learning and growing. So you talked about our texting conversations. A lot of our texting conversations are about, you know, nonfiction books that we like or people that have written memoirs. So it's a lot about learning that, you know, there's a lot of perspectives to take on. And when I step back and think about, you know, what would total fulfillment look like? Or what if you had all the answers? Or what if you climbed that highest mountain? It actually seems like that would be a little bit boring because it's like, what else is left, right? Yeah. Like, I really enjoy the learning and the growing and understanding people, which is really cool about what you do on this podcast is just understanding people's life experiences and, you know, how to relate to other people. So, yeah, I think my advice would be, you know, really learning to enjoy the process and find the happiness, you know, along the path. Sometimes that, you know, a lot of times you talk about, right, that path changes. You think you're going up one way and then you have to divert and go a different way. Maybe it's based on an obstacle or how your own life changes. But I think that would be one of the 200 advice that I would go back and tell myself.
I think that's great. I mean, cause, you know, and for those, everybody listening, you know, you've accomplished pretty awesome stuff in your life. I mean, it is amazing that even people that accomplish awesome things, they eventually have to get back to digging through, because I think in that peak, like you said, I mean, you know, growing up, going to play at OSU, Megan's really tall. you know, all of those things, it is, I could imagine when you were a kid, like, as you start to go through these evolutions, like what was the parts where you started to realize I'm really good at this, or I'm different to other kids? Cause I'm guessing you were tall, young.
I've always been tall. And okay. I'll tell you what, just a like funny story. If you want to feel different, I don't know why, but if you go to a retirement community, mm-hmm. you are like a celebrity if you are tall. I don't know what it is, but every time, like, I go down to visit my mom or I go visit my grandma, and people like look at you with this, like, and I'm not that, like, I'm 6'2". Yeah. So I'm on the tall side for women. Yeah. But I mean, I grew up with, you know, girls that were 6'5", right? Yeah. The girls at OSU, I mean, yeah. they're like 6'5", 6'6". Yeah. I feel like I'm run of the mill, but you walk into a retirement community and people are like, oh my gosh, how tall? It's bizarre. But I think going back to what you talked about, feeling different growing up, I think when you're young, it's almost like you don't inherently understand that you're different until people, just like I was saying at the retirement, right? It's everybody else pointing out that, you know, or I can walk into an airport and I almost always get the question of, do you play basketball or volleyball, right?
Yeah.
You know, or how tall are you?
Yeah.
So same thing when you're growing up, like I think inherently you're not like, you don't just understand, okay, I'm different. People start to point that out. So good example is, you know, really young, first grade, I'm out in the soccer field and we're playing the game and the game's going like really well. And all of a sudden I hear this commotion over on the sidelines and the adults are like yelling out onto the field. I'm like, what? You know, ignore it and you're playing. And then I start to realize like they're yelling at me or about me. Because they think I've got short hair that's like bleach blonde, looks like straw, right? So it's sticking up all over the place. I swam all year round. So I have like chlorine bleach blonde hair, short hairstyle. And I had the benefit of, you know, growing up earlier in Virginia Beach where they started playing soccer when they're like 3, right? Mm-hmm. I moved to Cincinnati. They don't start till kindergarten. So I got like a couple years up. Things are going well. And they think I'm like a little boy out playing with the girls on the soccer field. And they're like, I'm 7, 8. Yeah. And they're like pissed off. And so you start to realize in moments like that, like, oh, either I look different or there's something about me that's different. And that's not always something that people appreciate or celebrate, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So it's that same thing when, or similar, you know, and probably around the same time frame, like recess comes around, right? You go out to recess and people split off into their different groups. I always loved going to play tackle football, right? Mm-hmm. That was more fun than like playing on the merry-go-round or what everybody else was doing, and didn't think anything of it, right? Like, that's just what I like to do. That's who I want to hang out with. And I started to come home and pretty soon I started to have like on Wednesdays and Fridays, I had to wear a skirt, right? Because it was like, you know, I think my mom at that point was trying to help me fit in more, right? Like she saw differences and was like, hey, you might not want to stand out, right? Like, why don't you, you know, wear the skirt or wear something that looks a little bit more feminine. So I think it's like those moments where, you know, I didn't feel different on my own going out to play football. I was just doing something that I liked. I didn't feel different going out and playing soccer. Yeah. I was just playing soccer. But there starts to be moments where I think other people notice the differences and they're uncomfortable with them.
Yeah.
So they start to point those things out.
Yeah. They start to project them down on you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that, you know, that plays into your life as you go on later for sure.
Right. And I can only imagine like as you get older and you start to realize that even sexually different than everybody else, like how did that projection of what society went on, because we're of the same age, so it wasn't like it wasn't the same as it is now.
It was very, very different. So, you know, I started to go through the process of, you know, figuring that out in my teens, and unfortunately, you know, in a time where our church was actually splitting up. So over that issue, right? We had half the church that was leaving because they didn't want, I think it was about being able to be in the clergy, right? If you were LGBTQ. So our church was like literally splitting down the middle. One half was going off to start a new church that was not going to allow that. And then the Presbyterian church that we were in at that time was going to allow it. So our family decided, and I was in the, you know, really in the process of even figuring out that part of me. But I certainly wasn't open about, you know, trying to go through that process and figuring it out. So the church splits up. Our family decides to leave and go with the portion that is not accepting of LGBTQ, right? So fortunately at that time, I was actually able to drive. So I was, you know, made up some excuse about, hey, like most of my youth group's over at this church. And so I'm just going to hang over here because I'm just like trying to figure out how to not be, you know, in that church where it's definitely not accepting. So again, like you start to understand that you're different, but that case is a little bit different because you're kind of figuring it out on your own and you're seeing how society's perception of it was at that time. And there wasn't really, like you said, there wasn't really a lot of role models. So there was people you could maybe, you know, make a good guess about, right?
Yes.
But the reality is for people that were older than me, like there was implications potentially for their jobs,
right?
Or their livelihood of what they were doing. So they didn't feel safe to be out, but that meant that there wasn't role models or people to look to for advice or what that even looks like. Mm-hmm. So I still remember I was like an aide in the library and, you know, magazines would come in. I still remember this clear as day. There was a I don't remember what the magazine was, but there was an article that came in about Melissa Etheridge and her partner. And I, you know, you're not supposed to cut up the magazines because they're there for everybody to read. But I was cutting that out because it was like something to hold on to say, okay, here's an example of somebody that's like me, right? It's about not feeling alone in that space because there aren't the role models or examples that are out in the open. It feels very lonely.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went through the process again of trying to figure that out. And then I probably spent about 2 years in high school in the closet. And then going into college, I spent 2 years really struggling with the religious aspect of it based on what I was taught and really tried to be somebody that I wasn't, right? So I started dating guys, you know, shoved that part of me down. Was like, okay, I can overcome this, right?
Yeah.
And I think finally what I realized was that I can try all I want to be somebody that I'm not, but one, I'm pulling other people into my own lie about myself, which isn't fair to them. Mm-hmm. And I finally realized like I'm trying really, really hard to do this and it's not working. In the end, you finally just realize, hey, like this is who I am and I'm going to be okay with that. And yeah, so that was when I finally got to that point. And I think also, you know, meeting my wife, Heather, at the time, I didn't want to hide her, right? I wanted people to have the opportunity to get to know her because she's a great person. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to get the opportunity to know us as a couple. And I didn't want to hide that, right? Like I wasn't necessarily proud of, you know, the one relationship I had in high school. And I didn't want this to be associated, you know, people kind of figure your height, right? They have an idea, and even though it's not talked about, I wanted them to get to know Heather for the healthy relationship that we had and be able to see her for the great person that she was.
Yeah. I just want to echo something in that for everybody that would ever have that inkling in their head about not understanding the gay community at all, you know, LGBTQ. It's this idea that like, if you just go back and listen to what Megan just said, apply it to your life. What she's just talking about, figuring out who she is nothing different than you listening to what you tell yourself, the bad stories that you tell yourself in the mirror, the stuff when shit goes sideways, you got to blame somebody else, the stuff that you're just trying to figure out life and a lot of people will go into blaming somebody else.
Right.
The part of this, which is amazing. And, you know, I love to point out, especially when I speak to people that get this, is that by going in and actually dealing with your issue, you are able to show the world who you are.
Right.
Then you got to do the work on now accepting that, like, you know, and really that's where the work begins. It's like, you've learned how to like not give a shit what everybody else thinks.
Yeah.
And now I got to figure out like what I think. Now it's not easy. I think I'd make an argument kids nowadays, it's a little easier. Back when, I remember when I went to art school, first thing people I grew up to school, I didn't know you're gay. And I'm like, what? Like, cause I'm going to art school. It was like, what?
Yeah.
There was such stupid, like, stereotypes on everything. And I'm sure playing basketball or sports, it was always that same sort of thing. And I guess like, what's interesting for me is like how much you're able to articulate all of those things in the growth patterns of what you've become here. And I just wonder how it translates into your relationship with your wife. Are you able to communicate better? Or, cause one thing, you're both athletic.
Yeah.
So I've been at football games with you. You're both highly competitive moms.
Yeah. So what's funny is like at athletic games, we actually don't usually sit like right next to each other. I think actually a lot
you
of
don't.
People
do this way. You're usually sitting behind.
Yeah, I'm usually behind. She's in front of me. Her dad's, at least at the football games, her dad's to the right. And sometimes it's just logistics. So we have spaces for other people. But usually even at a basketball game, right, where you can sit wherever, we're usually like a little bit apart. I don't know why that is. But I think that's actually normal for couples. So in terms of communication, I think communication is like this lifelong journey of figuring out how to do it. And I do think that there are issues that I'm still working through from going through that and trying to hide parts of me, or going through that feeling of, lack of acceptance or belonging. So like the whole idea of being different is this weird dichotomy, because I don't necessarily want to fit in or be like everybody else. I like celebrating other people's differences. I like to be unique. I want to be my own person. But with that said, I want to be able to be different. And I still, like every human, right? I still want to feel like I belong and I'm accepted and loved. Mm-hmm. So I think figuring out how to marry those two things is something that I'm still working through today.
Yeah.
And you talked about like kids having it a little bit easier in the LGBTQ community today. Like, yes and no, right? Like, yeah, there's things that have changed and there's a lot more models out there that they can see in front of them and not feel as alone. So that's helpful. But there's a lot of BS still that, maybe depending on their family situation or school situation, right? It goes with every, like you said, it's not just sexuality, right? It's anybody that's different.
Yeah.
I just read a book talking about how kids have these expectations. So a lot of kids grow up and there's an expectation for them to be like a doctor or a lawyer or, some quote unquote high profile job. And that's not where their passion is, right? So for them, it's very similar of figuring out, how do I live authentic to what my passions are and what I love? And they're also not wanting to disappoint their family or their parents or the people around them. So it's just, it's just figuring that out.
Yeah, it is. You're right. I mean, I think with anything evolution wise, as we go through, I'm curious. I say evolution, but I, so when you talk about like, you don't necessarily change, right?
Yeah.
As a person, I think what you do is you like kind of transform a little bit, kind of like a caterpillar, right?
Yeah.
Like,
evolve. So, yeah.
Evolve. Like it's not like you can undo any of the past stuff,
right,
but you kind of bring all the stuff you've learned in the future. And I think that, it's like you said, like having those people out there, I remember when our oldest son came out, it was like, he talked about having people out there that he could understand. Oh, this, it's feeling seen,
Yeah.
Was it probably when they were like having the baby with, what's his name, right? Probably. Like,
yeah.
And Crosby. Yeah, yep. Yeah. And so I remember that article because I remember going like reading it. It was around the time when I was, I think, in college and getting away from all the stuff I grew up with.
Yeah.
And starting to go like, because I went to art school. Like I was like, everything that everybody had told me about gay people growing up was shattered within like one class of sitting next to somebody that in at home you would be like, oh, they seem like they're totally gay.
Yeah.
Because like, every like stereotype, and then they would just come right out and say, and for whatever reason in my country bumpkin brain, I said, oh, well, this isn't what they told me. This person isn't trying to hit on me. This person isn't, right. You know, and it's human. It's being a human.
I think that's actually really important. And that's one of the things that I learned. And we were very, so when we started a family, you know, you worry about like, okay, like what are the kids going to say to our kids? Or what are the parents going to think? Like are our kids going to be able to have sleepovers? Cause people are like freaked out,
yeah.
You know, that they're coming to a household with same sex parents. So we made the decision to be very, very intentional about, you know, volunteering in the schools and coaching youth sports, because we felt like if people had the opportunity to get to know us, they realize we're not, I mean, that's one small part of it, right? It's part of us, but it's not all of who we are.
Yeah.
And we're literally just like everybody else, right? Like you go through the same marriage challenges, right? You go through the same parenting challenges. We're really not, you know, and we talk about being different, like it feels different because maybe you're, you know, in the minority of gay versus straight, but you're not really different, right? We're all, like you said, we're human and we go through those same obstacles. And I found by, you know, being able to live more authentically, there was an appreciation or maybe even like a level of respect that people had. And actually you find that people are curious, like they want to know, like when we went through the process of, you know, having kids, people wanted to understand, like, how does that even work?
Yeah.
Right. And and there wasn't a book or a manual to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Like we were figuring out on the fly, you know, probably looking up articles on if they were even there on the internet and kind of figuring it out as we went along. And it was a process. So, you know, even from a family standpoint, so Heather's the biological mom. The plan was actually Heather was going to have our first one. And then 2 years later, I was going to try to have the second one. So went through the process, you know, we had like six chances with the first donor for Heather. She got pregnant on the third try. So we had three things left for me to try, went through those, didn't work. I ended up, I think, trying like 12 different times.
Wow.
Didn't work, right? And I wasn't one of those people that had this like maternal instinct, like I have to be pregnant. And we finally were like, okay, we know you can get pregnant. We're spending a lot of time and money for me trying. And it's, you know, the process, like I want to be a parent, but the process of going through and being pregnant, I'm like, I'm cool, like not having to do that, right? So we're like, let's just go back to Heather. And sure enough, like first time, you know, she tried again, she got pregnant. And what's interesting too is, like I said, we went through those six vials or whatever. So Ethan and Brady are, you know, it's nice that it worked out because they're biologically tied together through Heather, but they have different donors. So,
oh, really?
Because we ran out and they're like, well,
that
we
makes
can,
sense.
The company was like, we can spend $5,000 to try to find that person, but no guarantees. I'm like, no, we're good. We're like, we'll just like move on to the next one. So, they're actually biologically half brothers, but I feel like everything works out the way it was supposed to, where, you know, they're tied together. If you saw them, they look a lot.
Oh, they look a lot. Like,
they all have the Grunkelmeyer eyes, which are these like, you know, really light blue eyes that they all have.
When I met his grandpa, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. What's crazy is not just grandpa, like grandma has the same, like people will see the Grunkelmeyers and have no connection to the two. And they're like, oh, that's gotta be Elise or Heather's parent, or, you know, it's bizarre. Even though our boys are very different from each other, you know, there's a lot of features that they have, even though, again, it's just, I guess the Grunkelmeyer genes are strong.
They're very strong.
Yeah.
It's interesting to kind of go back a little bit that you made the conscious decision to be out and about in the community.
Yeah.
Is that from learning what it felt like as a kid going the opposite direction and kind of hide all of it?
Yeah.
Like, cause it, what is interesting, I will say from outside in, especially in the area where you live, cause we live in the same area where it's typically not as open.
Right.
Right. But having like seen, been to football games, see all the interaction, people don't treat you weird.
Right.
And I wonder if that was all almost a defense mechanism that you had, like, no, we got to be like this.
Yeah.
You and Heather both. Was it something that you talked about?
Definitely. Yeah. We talked about it. I mean, we would have conversations with our kids. I mean, our kids are like 4 and 5 getting ready to go out to kindergarten. And we're like prepping them on, okay, like people are probably going to say stuff. And what's interesting is same thing. Like the kids, at that age, they're not malicious or like trying to bully. They're just like, oh, like you have 2 months. Like, how does that work?
Right.
And so you don't know that, right? You're like trying to prepare your kids because you're worried about them being bullied or said something to. And there was like an occasional instance of that more when they were older, but really it has been curiosity, right? Like kids just want to know, like, how does that work? Yeah. Like, how do you have 2 months? Like, is one a stepmom or they're just asking questions because they're curious, which is good.
Yeah.
Right. So our kids learn to have those conversations and we tried to prep them to have those conversations. But to go back to your question about being intentional, 100%, like we had conversations about how we wanted to handle it intentionally. Like I said, being involved in the schools, being involved, you know, in our kids' sports lives, partly because we wanted to too. But I think from my experience at work as well. So, you know, going into my job after school, I was already with Heather, you know, already out of the closet. And, you know, I wanted to start being a little bit of an advocate. So at that point in time, you weren't in Ohio, you weren't able to get married. And there was some companies started to have like domestic partner benefits, which means healthcare coverage for your significant other, even if you're not married, because you couldn't get married in Ohio. So I was like, you know, you start to understand, like we talked about before, like I knew that we call them family, right? There's family at work that you know.
Yes.
And you know each other knows. I wanted to be an advocate for those people and show them, hopefully you don't know until you do it, right? That it's safe to be who you are, to bring your significant other around work. And then also I tried to advocate for, you know, being able to provide healthcare benefits for their spouse. So I think going through that learning process and then also seeing and having empathy for the people that didn't feel like they could do that, I wanted to, I don't know if example is the right word, but I just wanted to be more authentic. And like I said, I wanted other people to know our whole family and not just me or, you know, me and the kids. And I think I found that they, again, there's like this level of appreciation or even learning, right? Like people, I think, opened up their hearts a little bit, just like you said, right? Like you had one perception before, and because, you know, you weren't necessarily exposed to it before, you didn't have, you know, you didn't have a way to have a new perception until you started talking with people. And I found that, you know, people would tell me like, you kind of changed how I think about this because I've had the opportunity to get to know you. And that made a big impact on me too.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast this weekend and I can't remember what it was, but the person interviewing said something. It was like, that's exactly right. It was, he was explaining that there's this phobia of people asking people in LGBTQ,
right?
Questions, because if I say it wrong, you're judging me.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how there some
yes, that are can very, happen.
Like unforgiving. It's like wanting to be accepted by everybody, but also unforgiving if somebody says something wrong.
Right.
I remember when I was, I guess, teaching at school, and there was one kid reached out and said, my name is this on the sheet, but I go by this now. And I'm like, okay, cool. So never entered my mind that this person was this. And then I get in class, I'm doing a roll call first thing. I knew right away. But then there was another person, I was saying their name, and you know, you get a little picture next to you. Well, the picture
didn't look the same. Yeah.
Had a bigger beard than I, like it was, didn't look nothing, you know, like what you would expect.
Yeah.
And I just kept saying the wrong name, and then they corrected me. And, but I remember in class there messing up so many times and asking for forgiveness. And I think they ultimately ended up resenting me because, like, you know, like, no, I'm learning. Like, you have to understand in my world, even though I am 100% ally with you, this is new. Yeah, this is new territory. I'm learning this as I go. And you have to be willing to understand there's going to be mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool the people that do ask those questions, because I think that's where the true like trailblazers, like what you're doing. And it's really interesting to hear how much of, you know, from just listening to you, how much of what you talk about was your mask when you were a kid. As an adult, you've ripped off, you know, and that's what has actually led you to doing these amazing stuff. And, you know, and back to your kids, I'm curious about, you know, so you have two kids that are
Very different.
Very different, yeah. Right? You know, Brady, your youngest is, I told you before this, he's like my spirit animal. Like he's got the luxury of like, as an elementary or a young kid, like, remember we started talking, he was in elementary school. I was like, oh my God, like this is what I used to do, but I would get in trouble. Like yeah. Now you just said that they texted about it. And then you have a kid on the polar opposite, which, you know, is, you know, a D1 quarterback, you know, like just left school early to go play, which, you know, if anybody thinks that college athletics doesn't have it figured out on like how to feed these kids and work, the kid looks like he's aged like 3 years.
I think he put on the freshman 15 and muscle in 2 months.
So. Oh my God. It was like, you posted a picture. I'm like, holy crap. Like he was already in good shape, but now he looks like a D1 quarterback.
He's probably not done. Right.
Like, right.
Continuing to grow.
I'm curious of like, how does it work, you know, parenting wise, where you have both of you are kind of on the athletic side and you got a kid that's mondo creative.
Yeah.
That's in his own. I mean, he's in his, how do you, I'm guessing, I could be wrong, like that the athletic side, it's natural. It's kind of
right.
The ease and you're learning. You're
a little bit of both. Okay. So for sure it goes back to trying to be intentional. And we definitely, you know, Ethan had a ball in his hand from the time he literally could sit up, right? And we both played athletics. We both coached Ethan. I coached Ethan through middle school and football and basketball and whatever sport he was playing, right? So again, that's natural. That's easy. And then Brady's more like, for a while, wanted nothing to do with sports, right? Probably because we dragged him to everything. That he was like so tired and burnt out and never even played a sport, you know, until a little bit later. But what I noticed about him is he has this amazing imagination, right? And he would draw, he continues to draw. I can see that he's got like a connection to music. And some of the things that he says, his brain just works different. Like I'm jealous of the way his brain works because it's very fast and witty. And I enjoy that piece of him. But I think it goes back to being very intentional. We didn't want Brady to feel less valued because he saw our passion in sports align with what Ethan liked to do. And there's parts that, you know, I love about what Brady does. So like talking about intentionality, one of the things that I did was in the morning, starting in kindergarten, because Brady likes, you know, drawing and creative, I started drawing these napkins for him.
Yeah.
And it was an opportunity to give him a message. So I'd find a quote, and I don't have the imagination he does. So I'd usually find a quote and then find something to draw where I could just look at it and draw it on the napkin, put it in his lunchbox. And that was like my way of connecting with him because I wasn't coaching him or doing the same things that I was with Ethan. So it was just a little way to say, I love you, bud. Like, I'm thinking of you. Like, this is our thing. And that's continued. So I have thousands of these napkins. Yeah. I've done them from kindergarten. He's in eighth grade. I'm like, do you still want me to like put them in your lunchbox? Where he's like, oh yeah, you know, like keep it up. So but like, that's a good example of like really trying to, you know, intentionally make sure that your kids understand that you see value in what they're passionate about, right? Like I didn't want him to feel like he had to play sports because we like that. I want him to follow what he wants to do. And in the same way that we wanted to provide opportunities for Ethan to follow his passion with sports stuff, I'm trying to find opportunities for Brady. And what's cool about Brady is, you know, he's trying to figure out his path, right? Like I know he likes art. We've done anything from like sewing to taekwondo to figure skating to he's going to get into like theater. He actually loves improv, which is perfect because he's got that witty, you know, fast sense of humor. So, you know, being able to find opportunities for that. So just paying attention to what they like to do and what they're interested in and making sure that they know that you value that in them as well. So again, I think it just goes back to being really intentional and thinking about, you know, how to parent. And, you know, as you know, too, like parenting two different kids, you go through the parenting process with one and they're 4 years apart and you finally start to think you like are figuring parenting out, which like takes way longer than, you know, their age right now anyway. And then all of a sudden the next one comes along and they're like totally different. And you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing all over again. So it's still, it's still a process, yeah. But a lot of parents go through that.
I just want to like, you know, really just kind of celebrate the fact that like how good you are at being a parent. Like you both, like it is.
Don't ask my kids that.
No, but I'll tell you what your kids wouldn't tell you. Like it, you know, it is unreal to me, like how much you have been able to provide your kids what you didn't experience, but without overdoing and letting them have their experience.
Right.
Like I think a lot of times parents that I've talked to will try to recreate the mistake, block the mistakes
right.
that they went through by overdoing it and not allowing their kid or talking their kid out. And I think, you know, what I'm hearing from you is that what you did was you understood what your kid was about. And then how do you give them a space to be and let them fail and let them go through the process of figuring themselves out. And, you know, I think it's interesting because, you know, having talked with you a lot, like, it's like, you know, you'll message me some of the stuff Ethan will say, and I'm like, oh man, this kid's going to do big things. Like, you know,
Brady,
like,
you mean?
Yeah, Brady. I'm like, oh man, this kid's going to do big things. And then you were telling me about, I was asking you, I think something about like, what was the question that blew you away the most about Ethan going through recruiting? You said something about how he told the coach about he kept journals of what his record would
be. Yeah. So when he was young, Ethan would like dictate, you know, he would look out into the future and say, okay, he'd write on the top, you know, 2026, 2027 season, Big Ten. And at that time, right, like we live in Columbus, sure. So it was Ohio State. So he was writing down Ohio State and he'd pick like who they were playing. He'd write the score of the game. He'd write his draft status after the game, right? So like super, you know, pretty detailed. Yeah. And he was pretty, I still have these pages where, and he would write down every record, you know, for every game or every, you know, score for every game that season. And then, you know, at the end of the season, it'd be their final record or where they ended up in the football playoff, or at that time it was probably the BCS, right? Like what their end place was, he'd write down their AP rank.
Wow.
Right. So really detailed ability to visualize, you know, ahead. And what's really cool is to see some of that come to fruition.
Yeah.
I mean, that we were talking about, one of the questions I was going to ask you is, you know, your question about hope, like, is there hope that you find in your mini-me's too, right? Like your kids, like, are they teaching you lessons? And I think that's a lesson that's been really cool to, you know, learn from watching Ethan is he had a belief of where he was going. And it wasn't that we, you know, we believed in his ability and his desire to do that. But there's a lot of other factors that go into playing college athletics, right? There's timing now with the transfer portal. Like there's a lot going on. There's not like this, you know, linear process, let's just say. It, you know, sometimes there's things that are outside of your control, like your size and height and weight in terms of like, do you project to be able to play that position at whatever level? And I still remember this. I'll remember this vividly always. I took him to a visit. We're actually at an Ivy League school. So beautiful campus. You know, we show up and they offered him that morning. Spent the entire day walking around, like gorgeous day, right? So, you know, I'm walking around wide-eyed, like this place is like really amazing. Like it's awesome that he could have an opportunity to go to school here. And we get to the, you know, we're with the coaches probably for 5 or 6 hours that day. And we're getting ready to go we're at the end of the day on the practice fields and the coach is about to go one way and we're about to go back to the parking garage. And I looked at Ethan, the coach walks away and I'm like, but I'm just excited to hear like what he thinks. Cause I think like, this has been an amazing day. Like, you know, but I want to hear what he has to say. And he just looked me dead in the eye and he was like, Mom, I just see myself playing Power 5 football. Mm. Like, this is great. But this isn't what, like, this is not where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
So this is like, this isn't the fit.
Right.
And so to hear him say that and then continue to work at it and then have the opportunity he has today, like, I think there's a lot that's a testament to his vision from when he was like back to being a little kid of right. what he wanted. And then his ability to believe in himself, even though at times it was like, it didn't look very promising that was going to happen.
Right.
And then a year ago, things changed, right? His body changed. He grew a little taller, right? A little bigger and had the opportunity to, you know, showcase throwing the ball, I guess, and, yeah. and ended up with an awesome opportunity. But I think there's a lot we can learn from our kids yeah. from moments like that too.
At a Big Ten school too.
Yeah.
So it
yeah.
really like what he put out.
Yeah.
It was in Ohio State, but yeah. I mean, it's going to be just as big when they play.
It goes back to just like finding the right fit, right? Like yeah. I truly believe every time I step onto campus and see him and see, you know, from even before when he was there, like we'd go to the camp after he committed, you would just see the smile on his face, right? Mm. Like it felt like home, and to be able to see your kid, you know, have that smile and feel comfortable, that means so much as a parent. Yeah. And when we went to visit him the first time, it was like, it's one of those things where like you're a little sad, but you also realize it's a good thing. So went on a Friday night, took him out to dinner. Saturday, you know, they're pretty much busy all day. Got a chance to take him out again. And then we were going to leave. And, you know, pretty much, I think we went to the women's basketball game. And by the end of Saturday, he's like, all right, like you guys are good. Like you can go home. So it was like kind of sad, but you're like, okay, like this is right. where he's.
This is what
like,
you raised him for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's spreading his wings and enjoying his time, you know, working his butt off, right? He's tired and has a lot going on, but he loves being there. The culture is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, again, and I know I've texted you this, so I'll tell you here so it's recorded forever. You know, the thing is that I hope that you and Heather like really step back and take a little bit of this credit. Like, I think what you've created is an environment for both your kids to understand themselves. Like it, that's the one thing that I think that most people that go through experiences where we feel different. You know, I felt completely different. I was straight in line with Brady growing up, like just yeah. felt different and was super creative and people didn't relate to me. And, you know, I got pushed in the hallway. Right. And that caused the same sort of thing. I wear a mask and try, you know, I'd be all these different things that everybody I thought wanted and right. I'd people please and all stuff like that. And, you know, similarly, I think that with our boys, we've done the same sort of stuff was we, you know, as I'm working through my garbage, trying to give them the ability to be themselves and letting them fail and stuff. So I hope that you guys like really are stepping back and sometimes going like, I know there's a lot to say. It was his vision, his whatever.
Right.
But you gave him that opportunity to have that vision and to encourage that stuff. And it is through our scars that I think we do find like how to make the world a better place. And, you know, and I really want, you know, just like pass that praise to you that like, you know, you have done an amazing job.
I appreciate that.
Digging through all this crap that you've had to dig through. I know it's not been hard. It's not been easy, but you know, out of that, you know, the person that's here, I'm sure if you could have little Megan sitting across the table from you, which I know you write to all the time,
yeah,
her mind would be blown of where you're at. And I think a lot of times people don't take the time to recognize that within themselves. And so, you know, I just hope that, you know, you hear this, and if Heather listens to this episode, she hears it about like how much it's so awesome to hear. Because I talk to a lot of kids that their yeah. parents aren't this for them. And I'm trying to explain to them, but I can't because I'm not their parent, right? So I'm trying to say like, you know, you're basically saying, hey, when you go to college, you get to kind of figure out your own stuff. But that doesn't matter because yeah. the kid's in the moment. So the fact that you're able to do that, like you really it's amazing. And I know it couldn't have been easy being two moms, you know, and the challenges you went through, but like, God dang, you did like, you guys have done such an awesome job.
I appreciate that. And, you know, for everybody listening too, we definitely didn't do a perfect job. No parent does, but you know, we're, you know, learning like everybody else. And I think what I'm learning lately is when you don't, you know, when you don't do it perfectly, there's opportunity for repair. And that's, you know, some of what we're learning right now is figuring that aspect too. So I appreciate that. And it means a lot. And for sure, we've tried really hard to do a good job with, you know, being parents, but just like everybody else, we're learning as we go along yeah. and figuring it out and making our mistakes along the way too, which again, helps us grow. And if we can own up to those mistakes, our kids can see us own up to those. And, you know, I'm sure they'll parent a little bit differently
yeah.
if they have kids to figure out what, you know, what they liked and didn't like yeah. from our parenting as well. So
that's amazing. Well, I need to be respectful of your time.
Yep.
And you have a job. You have like,
I do.
You don't have like, I'm a floater. I get to like, I kind of pick and choose when work happens, but you know, I just, again, guys, I just want to like, you know, again, just, you know, just, you know, thank you for coming in here. It means a lot. Your friendship with me means a lot. I hope we continue. Maybe we can meet in person sometimes more often.
But, yeah, you know, go for some hikes. Yeah. trade book recommendations.
And I can't wait to cheer Brady on as he's creating all this stuff and, you know, getting into whatever he gets into and watching it change. And I appreciate the napkin drawings, doodles that you put on Facebook all the time. And, you know, and I will definitely be a Penn State fan when they're playing Ohio State, you know.
Awesome. Most people are like, well, we'll root for them every day except for when they play Ohio State. So no, I'll appreciate
that.
I'll be the flip of it. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Because I definitely, you know, come to watch them play, and had seen a couple of times the year before to see like this past year, and it was like, holy cow. Like, and I feel like it was just all of a sudden, like you were going on these visits and all of a sudden they just started like, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa. Like, holy cow. Yeah. And so, you know, again, just want to like, this is a testament to like what it means to find your path. I think in your life, in Heather's life, in your kid's life, where it is a series of, you know, figuring stuff out and evolving and understanding that the past doesn't necessarily go away, but it helps us keep paving that path forward. And you're doing a great job
at,
you know, being a human and, you know, cause it's not easy. You know, above all, guys, if you could do Megan and I a huge favor, I know you know at least two people that needs to hear this, that knows two people. That's all I'm asking you to do, is at least forward this to two people that also know two people. That way we can start this little wave of growth as we start spreading hope, to get people to see that they have actual value in their life that is stuff that maybe they don't even see themselves. But there's people out there that have gone through stuff that can be guideposts to help you through on your journey to get to the next stage. So, so
thanks for it. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You did
it's
a
different
great
being
job.
On this side of the microphone.
You did a great job. So thank you so much, Megan, and I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Foxland Media. Think big.